Accession number 22077, Reel 6.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 6. Okay, so Fort St. George, what was that? That sounds like a sort of real...
It was a real old barrack, but very good. Very good, well appointed, and as I say, it wasn't too far out from town, and right on the beach, wonderful. And we had swimming pickets every night, too, because there were sharks, and there was a bund out there, you were not allowed out beyond that, and we had pickets every night.
What, picket fence?
No, there was an actual sandbank, and it seemed only once a shark was seen to come over that sandbank, but there was always a swimming picket every night there. Lovely swimming. I used to go there night times. We had midnight parties later on there. See all the phosphorus on my body. Lovely. But when I went... I don't think I told you that the girlfriend I had, Yvonne, she left to be an officer's maid sometime before this. And I was devastated, my girlfriend... And then she was going to marry an officer, and that was that. So I was very upset when we went to Madras. But I didn't go to church the first Sunday, and my chum, Ted Stevens, he wasn't my real chum, but he was a band friend of mine, Ted, and he came to me and he said, "Mick, we'd like you to come to the church I went to last week." I said, "Where's that?" He said, "It's Georgetown Methodist. It's the oldest church in the world, I should think, in India." So I said to him, he said, "It'd be nice if you came in the choir." So I said, "All right." Ted had a baritone voice. And so I went down, and they had a choir of 18, 20 people at the time, two police officers. And I sat behind, there was an elderly lady playing the organ, and I sat behind three girls whose names were Dorothy, Julia, and Gwen. Sisters they were, Bishop their name was. And the girl in the middle, she had a halo hat on. And I've always called her Angel ever since. She had this halo hat on. And I fell in love with her. I'm sure I did anyway. But the point is, I said to myself, that's the girl I want. Not that I ever thought was going to happen, but her mother, the lady on the organ, was her auntie. Her mother was a nurse, and she couldn't come that day. But her aunt invited us back to lunch, Ted and I. And we went and had a real typical, chota first and then curry and rice and a real meal and so on. Of course, I hadn't been fed like that for a long time. And we went every Sunday, actually. But we chatted to Julia and she said, we were talking about where she had schooled. She'd just come down from the hills and she was in teacher's training at the time. And she said she'd been to Lawrence Royal Military School up in the hills, at Ootikwund, Lovedale, the place is called. And both her sister was still there, a young one, and Dorothy, they'd both been there at school. And she came down, now she was doing her teacher's training. But she spoke to me about this wonderful place, the Nilgiri Hills. And I was quite enthralled, because when I was at school... I learned a song, a poem. And she was telling me all about how wonderful it was. And I'm thinking, I wonder what Mr. Williams would think, my school teacher. They sent us to the Nilgiris before the heat got bad. The nearest thing to paradise this world has ever had. You'll be seeing Ooty soon, yet you aren't glad. Well, you are one. I can remember it all. Miles of woods and rivers and so on. And... it comes at the end, and why didn't he want to go back? Because he just got married, and he couldn't want to go back to India then. However, I couldn't believe what she was saying, but I remembered this poem. And then we were told that we had to go to this place at Wellington, where there was a barracks, where the King's Regiment, not the King's Liverpool, the King's Regiment were there, and we were going up there for the heat season, the band, to play at the governor's residence sometimes, who always went to Ooty during the hot weather. And we went up there on this railway. up the hill. It absolutely wonderful it was. You could get out and walk and pick flowers and then go around the next bend and catch the train. You know what I mean? It was wonderful. And everything she told me came true. We went to bed that night quite tired, and I woke up in the morning, and I don't think I've ever felt so fit in my life. I took a deep breath, eucalyptus and tea. Absolutely wonderful it was, honestly. It really was wonderful. We had a lovely time.
That would be in the hot season in 1936.
And now we're up in the hills, right. 7,000 feet up. Beautiful. The weather was absolutely divine, wonderful. And, I mean, for us from Madras, it was 105 in the shade when we came up, you know. And that was the first morning. One day we were asked to play at
Sorry, I was going to ask, what sort of a station was Wellington? What was it like?
The station was lovely.
It was a town, was it? Or was it
just a little village, actually. Oh. Coonawr was the village, where there was also a big railway institute just down the road from us. Then there was Wellington Barracks, and then there was Arvancadu. That Arvancadu was the army munitions factory. There, a lot of the Anglo-Indian people were there. We met quite a lot, of course, during the time we were there. But eventually, by the way, our barracks at Wellington, they call it hut barracks. It was just a series of huts just for leave people. We were up on leave, literally. And the regiment, the barracks, which we came to ultimately when we were posted later, was actually in Wellington, big, huge place, the barrack area. Anyway, I still had my dog at this time, and he came up with me. And Stan Long was also coming up because there was going to be a transfer of goods to Wellington. So he still had the dog. He used to keep my dog, but he was my dog, always my dog. And we hadn't been there 3 days when we got an invitation to play at a dance at the Coonawr Club. Ever so posh. So we went in our posh dicky bows and short mess jackets. And suddenly, a big Rolls Royce pulled up outside this club, and a lady got out with six other girls and came in and sat down, sat over in the corner, had her tea, and we went on playing. And then a lady came over and she said, excuse me, are you all soldiers? And yes, we said we were. And Lady Marjorie said, could she speak to the vocalist, please? Of course, Bill Gibbs, my bandmaster, he said, show off. I went over and, yes, ma'am, it was the governor's lady, Lady Marjorie Erskine. And she said, would it be convenient for you? I don't know your name, and I told her Lance Corporal Metcalf. And she said, would it be convenient for you, Mr. Metcalf, to come and sing at Government House? And I said, I would be delighted, ma'am, but I'd have to get the colonel. We will look into that. She told Bill Gibbs. Bill Gibbs went over and chatted to her. This couldn't happen then, of course. And 4 days later, the message came up that colonel said, yes, of course I could go. And I'm not joking. I went over to Government House by myself. Car was sent for me. I had a wonderful time. I just sang songs like Because, and, you know, she wanted a concert evening. I sang for about an hour. Had a lovely time. They gave me 50 rupees, which I had to give some of that to the band when I got back, of course. But Lady Marjorie was a real lady. She was a charming woman. I saw her twice up there. What I want to say is that we stayed up there for a month. Then we had to go back to the plains again, where Julie and I took up where we had left off. But she wrote me every day, and I used to write her 11-page letters every day about this wonderful place. Really, it was wonderful. And it was horrible getting back to that stinking Madras. It really was. Anyway, that was it. Julie came up once while I was there, and we went to her auntie's place, and we sat in the garden, and we picked mangoes off the tree. Can't believe it now, can you? They're not cost a lot. They don't taste the same here. And I went to a dance. I chaperoned her one night to a dance. I didn't chaperone her. Her auntie chaperoned her, because no girls went to dances in those days without being chaperoned. We had all sorts of old women at our dances who were looking after the girls. And Aunt May, she used to come and go to sleep, thank God. But this night I went to a dance. I wasn't playing, I went to a dance. I remember it well because I had knuckled trouble at the time. And when we went that night, Julie had played hockey in the afternoon and got a bloody black eye, I'm sorry. And my adjutant said to me, I didn't think you took on girls as well, Metcalf. So I remember that first night we went together. And we played a lot of charity dues. And we went to the City Hall to play a dance, charity dance. And it was the governor, Lord Erskine, was to be there. But he didn't turn up. He never did. He was a real farmer type. Very nice man. A real gentleman. But he didn't like these sort of things. So Lady Marjorie turned up with her entourage. Sat on the stage. Looking as though she was going to shriek any minute. So I said to my band sergeant, I'm going to ask Lady Marjorie for a dance. This crows like a scene. And he said he wouldn't dare, Mick. I said, oh, I will. So I went up and I said, good evening, ma'am. She said, good evening, Corporal Metcalf. I said, would you care to dance? You saved my life, she said, and we danced. And I'm not being, I know it sounds strange, because soldiers were not thought very well of in those days by civilians. But because of this, she called me Mick, and I called her Marjorie. And I met her quite often when we played at Government House in Madras later on. In fact, Julie's cousin was the chief electrician there as well, my wife's cousin. But she was a charming person. I only met him once. And that was when the chairs had been taken from there. The bandsmen took the chairs they'd been playing on back to barracks. 22 chairs, we had to take them all back. That's another story. But that was very nice. She was a charming person. And then I got down to there, KG5 Jubilee, and I told you I had to wait to go on leave the following year. Yeah. And
what were the Jubilee celebrations like in Madras then?
We had very little. We paraded, I mean the regiment paraded, you know, but there was very little apart from that. Can I say this, Madras was a very, very Indian city then. There were lots of British people, and the police force was all British, of course. I think they had their own, we had friends who were in the police force. I think they had their own function. In fact, they must have done, because two of them were in my choir and they couldn't come that evening for some reason or other. Not my choir then, but
I mean, life sort of went on fairly peaceably.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a while.
It's a settled atmosphere. I'm getting that impression from what you're saying.
There was very little trouble until a man named Gandhi began to show. Not being funny about this, he was a very peaceable man. But wherever he went, there was always trouble. Because there were Hindus and Brahmins and all the rest of it, yes? So, when he came to Madras, there was an awful riot. In fact, two people came over Julie's garden, ladies, with their breasts cut off, where they... You know, this was the sort of thing that went on. It wasn't widespread, but it did happen. Gandhi, same old story. And when he came to Burma later, but that's another story, of course. But otherwise, it was a very, very peaceful place. We had no trouble at all. No riots.
Did you go on alert when Gandhi was there?
Oh, yes. The battalion was out at various points in a city where he was going to cause or may cause trouble, you know. The band didn't go out on that occasion, nor the drums. Uh-huh. But the regiment were out in force. They only stayed out 2 days till it was all packed up. They didn't have to use any force, by the way, so it was good for us. Madras, I stuck with the choir. I stayed there. And then came the time for me to come home leave. And we had friends living across the road from Julia, and we went there. Spent the evening, and my half-brother, he was no relation of mine, but Frank Izzard, his mother had befriended me when I was in Bristol, and his mum and dad used to send me cake as well as Frank. They always called me their boy. And they said, if anything happens to your mother, who was much older than them, you'll always have a home here. And I always called them mum and dad.
Yeah. You were an only child, were you?
No, my brother Ted, he still lives in Bristol. Yeah. He's 92. Right. And I was able to send him some money recently, thank God. Not that he's poor, but that's, I was very pleased to be able to do it. But we don't meet very often, but it's another story about that, of course, which I won't tell you. And it was... How can I put it? I wanted to come home, of course, but I didn't want to leave at that time. And I wanted to become engaged. But Julie said, no, when you get home, your girlfriend, Flo, you might want to go back with her because she was my school girlfriend. I said, it won't happen. But we didn't become engaged. But we stayed. We had an evening together. And then Frank Izzard came to see me off and he said, you know what to do, Mick, when you get home. You'll go to Rose Cottage, see my mum and dad and my sisters. And we had a long chat. And I said, you look after my girlfriend while I'm away, which he did. And I came home on leave. I had a wonderful 6 months. I really did.
You had 6 months leave?
Yes, from Burma. But after 6 years, you got a month for every year. And I'd had to stay behind because of the... I got to Temple Meads Station. My mum was there as we came around the bend. I started to cry and we had a lovely hug. And we got on the bus and came home. And, I had a lovely leave, put it that way. It was a bit difficult to start with.
You'd been away, what, 6 years?
7 years.
7 years. So you went away as a 15-year-old.
I came back a man. I was a lance corporal when I came home.
Yeah.
And the first thing my mother did when I got home, it sounds silly now with money what it is, but she gave me £42, my mother. That's 1930. It was a lot of money. It was a lot of money. And that was the money I made her up, shilling a day allowance when I joined up. It was £14 a bit and a bit more that was over the 6-7 years, eh? And all the money I saved when I was playing out and she saved me £42. I had a wonderful holiday. We went all over the place. And my girlfriend Flo Burns, we used to go ice skating. That was another thing. I went to the rink in Bristol 2 days in my uniform. And there was a commissionaire there. It used to be in Park Row, the Coliseum. And he said, you on leave then? I said, yes, from India. He said, who are you with? And I saw him. He said, I'm ex-grenadiers. He said, do you intend to come here every day? I said, well, I don't expect I'll be able to afford that, because it wasn't cheap then. It was relatively dear, I mean. And he said, how long are you on for? I said, well, nearly 6 months. He said, I'll get you a pass. He said, come with me. We went and he spoke to the manager, and he got me a pass, a pair of skates and boots, and a locker. I never paid a penny. I never paid a penny for it. I went there every day of my leave. I went to the rink. I loved ice skating. Yeah. Of course, I couldn't do any in India. I used to do a lot of roller. Yeah.
And that was because you were in Gloucester.
Yeah, that's right.
Real pride, isn't it?
Funny, you know. It really is funny, really.
Yeah.
And my mum used to come up to meet me with her friend, and we would go down to Avery's in Park Street. Mum, I didn't drink, but Mum and she used to have a glass of sherry. And we used to go to Lidl's home, and we used every Thursday afternoon, we went to the Odeon Cinema, which was then in Winterstoke Road. It was only 6 months on Wednesday afternoons, so we always went. But when we came back, we always used to stop at a little shop in North Street to buy 3 pork pies for tea. And Ella lived down in Southville, and we came out one night. I'm in my blue uniform. It was about 5:10. And we walked up the road and I went in this shop and I didn't have any money. Neither did they. And I'd already ordered the pies and the lady in the shop said, what's the matter? I said, I have no money. I'll be back shortly. This is true. I stood outside, took my cap off and I started to sing songs. And I got 3 and 6 months. My mother was horrified. She walked away. She would have nothing to do with me. It was real fun. And some of the girls from the factory I'd known at school, of course. It was a great joke. It was all done for fun, but I got 3 and 6 months and paid for the pies. But I really had a lovely leave, and Flo used to come skating with me with a friend of hers from school, from work. She worked at Wills's. And I used to go with her to the motorcycle. Oh, yeah. They had a motorcycle. Yeah. I wasn't very fond of it, but because she came with me, I went with her. And the last night we spent together, and her dad, I met her at the station the next day with my mother when I was leaving. And she said, "You know what, Mick, you're not going to believe this." She said, "You remember when my daddy wouldn't let me go with you when you were a boy? And her mother used to meet me after church to take me down to the park so that Flo and I could chat together before I was 14. And her dad didn't like me. I don't know why. But he said, "You're not going to believe this, Mick." She said, "When you left last night, my dad said, 'That's the sort of chap you ought to have got married to.'" She wasn't married then, Flo. Her husband died last year, actually. But we've been friends ever since, and Julie and her. But I went back to India, and we got to a place called Basin Bridge Junction, just near Madras. And I sent a wire to Julia to tell her I was there, and she came up. And I always remember my major, Julia. Jawohl. And Shuligan.
So you sent her a telegram.
Yeah. And she met me at Basin Bridge Junction. And we had a major with us at the time going back. I took a draft back with me of boys. And 9 boys and 50 men. I was lance corporal in charge of them. And I waited on the station, and Julia came up. And the colonel, the major he was then, his name's gone from me at the moment, but it doesn't matter. And he said, "You don't go out there, Metcalf. None of this prostitution business here." I was ever so upset. I could have killed him. Never had a chance to speak to her, really. And, of course, she was very upset because she'd come from Madras up to Basin Bridge. So I went up to the Nile Bridge. We were then stationed there. The regiment had moved from Madras to Wellington Barracks.
Right.
Yes. So this is Christmas Day 1937.
That's when you got back.
That's when I got back. And who was waiting for me? A man named Captain Fred Carn, who became Colonel Carn VC later on. He was my boxing officer and my adjutant. And as soon as I got back to barracks, he said, "Metcalf, we're going in for the All India Tournament. Will you be able to box?" And I said, "Well, I'd rather not, sir. I want to get engaged. And you know what it is when you go away on these trips? I couldn't save any money." So he accepted it with bad grace. Because I knew him very well, Colonel Curran.
What sort of a chap was he?
Wonderful man.
How old was he then? I mean, he'd be quite young then, was he?
Oh, yes. He was Captain Adjutant then. He was... He would be about... I was what? 1937. I was 22. 20. He would be about 3 years older than me. About 26, 27, Fred Curran at that time. Wonderful man. Or a very, very good adjutant to start with. And, I mean, the adjutant ran the regiment, by the way. And, lovely man. And he said, "Well, look, if anything happens to any of the lads, will you be prepared to stand in?" And I said, foolishly, yes. Jurgensen, the big fellow on there, the South, broke his bloody ankle. The men had already gone down to Bangalore. I got a telegram from Fred Curran to say, "Come as soon as possible." He knew my girlfriend was up there because Julie came up because over the Christmas period, you see, from school. And she was a train. So as we used to go out training in the mornings for a week, she came out running over me all up and down the ruddy hills. And then I took her back to Madras and went on to Bangalore, by which time I was down to my middleweight because I'd put on quite a bit of weight before. And we boxed at Bangalore. I knew quite a few girls there from school. Julie, I used to meet Julie's school girlfriends all over the country. But there's a chap on that picture called Mick Walker. He was a sergeant then. And Mick had come in to stand in as heavyweight for Jurgensen. And he fought a man who became, he was a lieutenant then, an officer. And he fought this chap who became a captain and a colonel of the Wiltshire Regiment later on. Sorry. And his name, I think it was Newton Dunn, I can't remember, I think that was his name, but I have never seen any man or any two men fight like they did. It was a real, neither of them were boxers. They slugged each other for three ruddy rounds, and at the end they sort of fell on each other. Never, ever have I known in army boxing to be a draw. The officer in charge said, I have never, ever, I make it a draw. We beat the Wiltshire Regiment by about three fights. And
so
then,
tell me about the Bangalore. This was our All India Boxing Tournament, was it?
Yes.
So where was it held?
Bangalore, it was called at a place called Bacolors. Bacolors was a big dance area, open air.
Oh,
and it was, the boxing ring was there always. I've been there a couple of times.
Yeah.
But
just
I knew
one
people.
Ring or?
Just one ring,
one
yes.
Ring.
You fought.
One at a time.
One at a time. In the evening.
Right.
Lights. We won. And we stayed there 4 days. Because it was a very pleasant station, actually. And I was glad because Julie had friends there from school. And they treated us pretty fairly, some of us. We had meals with all of them. And Bacolor was very good to the regiment. He always liked the glosses. The Wiltshire Regiment were there. And we had a very good time with the Wilts. Always had. Wherever we met them, there was good relationship. We went from there. I can't remember very much now. But we went on a long, long tour. Captain Khan called me to stay for her week, and she didn't throw her with me. On that side, wait a minute. Yes. We went from there to Secunderabad. We boxed a Scottish regiment whose name I don't know. I can't remember. 7-4 we won, and we went back to Bangalore for a week's rest. And we went from there. We trained there, and then we went to Bombay. And we beat the Somersets, our sister regiment, literally, 8-3. We went back to Secunderabad to stay for a week before we boxed the next people, King's Regiment. Not the King's Royal Regiment, but another King's Regiment. King's Royal, not the King's Liverpool Boys, and we beat them 6-5. We went to Calcutta, where we met the Argyll and Sutherlands, and we won 8-3. That was the semi-final. Whilst in Calcutta, and the man in charge, Sergeant Brushton, he said, I don't expect you know any women up here, Mick, do you? And I said, no, I don't. We'd hardly spoken when there was a phone call for me, and I went to the phone and said, is that you, Mick? And I said, yes. It was a lady, and I said, who are you? She said, I'm Yvonne. It was my girlfriend from years ago. You can't believe this, can you? I said, what are you doing here? She said, oh, I'm still a lady's maid. I didn't get married. I said, well, where are you? And she said, well, can you meet me sometime? My sister Joan is here too. The other girl had gone to England, I think. So we made arrangements to meet at a place called the YMCA, Chowringhee, in Calcutta. Well, I was very lucky because there were 7 ruddy YMCAs on Chowringhee, which was a hell of a long road. And we actually got to the right first one. Well, Jim Brushton said to me, don't be in any later than 10 o'clock, Mick, or you won't be fighting tomorrow. That was it. And I had a hell of a time to get away from. We had a wonderful evening together. They took me to a cafe and they had money. I mean, we had a posh meal, and I didn't tell Jim about that either. But they went, both of them went out to Africa as missionaries afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
I met their sister later on, years ago, but dear old Yvonne. That was what lovely. Yvonne had not married her officer, got back to barracks just after 10. We fought the Cameroonians in the final, and we lost 6-5, first time,
yeah,
in the finals. I fought a chap called Tiger Rag. His name was W-R-A-W, but they called him Tiger Rag. And quite frankly, after the first round, I thought I had his measure. He was a much bigger man than me. I had big legs, and he had big arms, you know. And I thought I had his measure, ha ha. I don't know what happened, but I came round eating steak and chips in the canteen with my team. Yes?
Yeah.
I lost the fight on points. I don't remember at all. They said I boxed right to the end, and I was unlucky to lose my chat. But I didn't know anything about it. You know, he must have knocked me out, literally, and I was still able to... anyway, I had a broken nose, and my eyes were quite... because of them. We went back to Wellington via Madras, and I stopped at Madras to go to the hospital. My Colonel Curran said, Fred Curran said, you better go to the hospital. Of course, Julia's mother was a nurse, and she worked there, and... all they did, they put two pieces of plastic up my nose and straightened it. And it's straighter now than it was ever done before, by the way. I had it in for a few weeks. But I didn't half look a sight, they told me. We had, I spent the day with her, and then we went back to the unit.
I'll stop you there. Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 6.